We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal Boys and Girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful New York City, my man, the one and only Oregon fan, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Improved?
Yeah, okay.
Improved. I have thoughts. There's a lot of games to have thoughts about. I am, I guess, fortunate. I feel fortunate that the Oregon-Auburn game was the only one between ranked teams, the only like real significant matchup of week one in terms of rankings. But we're going to try to get through a lot so I can forget a little bit about the Oregon-Auburn game.
Well, it is my hostly duty to make sure that you don't forget too much about it, because I'm sure people are tuned in to get your reaction to that, as well as so much of the other action that took place in week one. If you're tuning in for the first time, you could find us on our website, solidverbal.com. You can also find us on social media. We've got a Twitter at solidverbal, a Facebook at facebook.com/solidverbal, as well as an Instagram. You guessed it, instagram.com/solidverbal. There is also a subreddit that is started by some of our most loyal fans. We call them Verballers. You can get there at reddit.com/r/solidverbal. Dan, what was your general takeaway from what we saw in week one? Did you have any?
It's my general takeaway from all weeks one. I guess that would be the grammar involved. It's that it's hard to learn a lot because this is the first time these players and a lot of these teams are very new in terms of injuries and scheme and coaches and opponent style, that the only real thing that we can take away is we learn more about the kinks that need to be worked out. And so there are a ton of really interesting, intriguing things to take away. And there are suddenly worrisome things that we knew about or we didn't know about. And I think that's what we should probably focus on, because the variability of opponent was pretty wide with week one. So hard to take away a ton. And also we're doing a Monday show now, which will dive deeper into a lot of our very specific thoughts about what to take away from week one, big picture. But it's that it's more of a spotlight on the kinks than anything else.
Yes. Don't forget, as Dan mentioned, there will be a show that drops on Tuesday morning. We're recorded at some point
Monday,
on Labor Day, but Tuesday morning in time for your commute as you head back to work, where I think we're going to dive a little bit more into some of those kinks and some of these takeaways. In general, though, the biggest takeaway, I think, for week one is that there are a lot of teams that have much work to do before week two.
Also that the word kink has multiple meanings now with Hugh Freeze.
Very true, which we will get into. All right, here is what we do on the verbal. For those new listeners, for those old listeners, we have a voicemail line. You may be familiar with 408-VERBAL-1 or 408-837-2251. Our boy Taylor down there in DC mixed up, put together a supercut, about 3.5-4 minutes of all of your week one voice messages that you called in and left for us throughout the span of Saturday. So here you go. Without further ado, your week one reverbs.
Ty and Dan, college football is back.
Hello, Ty and Daniel. It's Sean from Seattle.
Hi, this is Patrick from beautiful Hayward, California.
Hey, this is Will in Maine.
Dan, Ty, it's Peter from D.C. Good morning, college football.
Hey, this is Dylan from Denver, Colorado.
Verballers everywhere, get up, get hydrated. It's game day!
College football is back, and I'm ready to be heard again.
I'm 20 years old, and I've spent all morning prepping appetizers and dips to host a college football party in my first apartment. And I feel like Dan and Ty have been grooming me for this moment for the past decade.
It wasn't pretty, but those Auburn Tigers pulled out the win in the end. The legend of Bo Nix is born, baby.
Oregon, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. I'm going to invite the entire Oregon football coaching staff to my funeral so they can let me down just one more time.
Do you freeze watching football while lying down and barely coherent? Relatable.
If only there were a song to describe how soft Tennessee's defense is. Hear me out. Maybe Will Muschamp isn't a good football coach.
Does UCLA have a quarterback problem?
Thursday night, college football is on TV, and Cincinnati's running back, Michael Warren, is a dude.
Utah has beaten BYU 9 times in a row. We Ferris Bueller them.
After his outstanding diving catch and then dive for the end zone, I had to teach my 50-year-old father how to pronounce the name of the player, LaVisca Chenault Jr.
All right, so everyone's trying to sleep, so I have to be really quiet here. But if I wake up and Clay Helton's not fired tomorrow, I am going to be very, very, very sad.
I am just going back from the Oregon State-Oklahoma State game. If you have made a I think OSU is going to win joke, you should be ashamed of yourselves.
This is what it means to party like a rock star. I think I'm just going to stay home.
In a college football world where every underdog somehow sneaks up on the favorite, how in the world is Illinois the only team handling their business at home against a lesser opponent?
I'm just wondering if Purdue was decided to pay Jeff Brohm $5.5 million this year to unsuccessfully ice the Nevada kicker in night games on opening weekend.
Go Boilers. The drive for six begins.
It's a pretty crazy thing when Clemson can beat a team 52-14 and people still find a way to talk about how Clemson isn't all that great.
I'm going to need some advice on how to cope with this impending 4-8 season the Hokies are about to put together. You guys have some recent experience, so maybe you could help me.
How about them Broncos, eh? Go Boise State.
The third and fourth quarter numbers are always going to come out in your favor when starting a QB that has his own accounting firm. Congrats to Bachmeyer and Associates.
In week one, my beloved San Jose State University Spartans have matched their win total from all of last season.
It may have taken years off my life. I may need a therapist, but Army now has got their 14th straight home win.
Oh, Rocky Top, you'll always be sixth in the SEC East. Good old Rocky Top, woo, sixth in the SEC East.
All right, Dan, there you go.
Mid-season form.
Mid-season form. Folks picking up right where they left off at the end of the 2018 season.
Yep.
Dan, let's start with the good SEC story of the day.
the lone, I guess there were a couple, but
the
yeah.
Lone, the best SEC story of the day. And I frame it as such to try and put a positive spin on what was undoubtedly a bit of a painful experience for you. In the evening, it was a game between Auburn and Oregon. Auburn won the game 27-21. True freshman Bo Nix, I thought, had a pretty good first outing. Hit or miss in spots, but by and large, I thought he looked the part. if the eye test is a real thing. He connects with Seth Williams for a 26-yard touchdown pass with just 9 seconds left in the game. That gave Auburn a 27-21 victory after your boy Justin Herbert threw it out of the end zone on the Hail Mary attempt. What is your perspective of this game, Dan? Because I suspect as an Oregon fan, you're coming at it from an entirely different direction than SEC fans and Auburn fans who might look at it and say, hey, we were down 21-6 late in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. We came back. We found a way to win. Bo Nix, I thought, looked the part, had his moments, but big play when he had to get one. That's a pretty good thing from the Auburn perspective, is it not?
Yeah, Bo Nix wasn't good until he was. And Oregon lost the situational moments. They lost the big moments. Both of the defenses did plenty to win this game. I thought Oregon's defense was improved. I thought Auburn's defense was scary, especially up front in both forcing Oregon to sprint out Justin Herbert as their passing offense, essentially, and smothering a very underwhelming receiving core from Oregon. Only so much they could do there. But the big takeaway was Oregon had moments and they could not take advantage. Auburn had moments. They also couldn't take advantage until they could. And it's the drop touchdown catch from Brian Addison. It was Auburn not being able to capitalize on that long fumble return down to like the 3 yard line. It was Oregon with the timeout mess, you know, not going for it on fourth and one and then going for it in a very obvious way on fourth and one after using timeouts. And so Oregon had its opportunities. If they tackle Bo Nix on that fourth down a foot short, Oregon wins the game. And Auburn, as good teams do, they wore down Oregon and then they made the plays in the biggest moments. And then I know Oregon fans will say, well, you know, Justin Herbert doesn't have a lot of people to throw to, and like his receivers were smothered, nobody was open. What happened when Justin Herbert had a pseudo Hail Mary on like the 35 to win the game?
He threw it out of the end
yards,
zone.
Threw 11 yards over the end zone. That's a moment, Ty. Auburn won the moments. Auburn won the game.
Can I get fantasy points for my selection of late game James Franklin via Mario Cristobal?
I was texting back and forth with our pal Jeff Schwartz, and it's confidential. I don't want to like say exactly what he was saying, but he was very much on the train. Like, now people will think, when Oregon's up 21-6, when Oregon's up 14-3, now people will finally think Mario Cristobal's a really good coach for
really
Oregon.
Excellent coach, especially. And then during that tremendous sequence towards the end of the game, you glossed over it. I need to focus a little bit more on it. Yeah. One of those deals where Justin Herbert, he had like his kneecap knocked by another player and he had to sit out of play because that's the rule. And the play that he was going to be sitting out just happened to be a big fourth down play. So he goes off the field. Oregon calls a timeout to try and game plan, get their stuff together. And they also figured that the timeout might negate the rule that Justin Herbert has to sit out a play. Well, of course it doesn't. So when they resumed from the play stoppage, Justin Herbert comes out on the field. The refs were not having any of it. This seemed to catch Mario Cristobal a bit by surprise, at which point they called another timeout. So two timeouts in succession. Right. The play did not work out. Auburn gets the ball back, and it was sort of downhill from there. But yeah, a little bit of late game James Franklin there. There were other spots around college football. We saw Willie Taggart doing a James Franklin impression, a little homage.
That was down the stretch. An extended cut. Yeah.
An extended cut. So we had a couple moments of not brilliance down the stretch. But, you know, Oregon's defense, I thought, was a good takeaway for you as an Oregon fan. We joked
definitely
a lot about the aggressive attacking mentality thing, but Oregon really did have it. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting on a number of different levels, primarily because I don't feel like we've ever said that in 12 seasons now of doing a podcast about the Oregon defense.
Yeah, 2012 and the 2010 to 2012 era, it was a good defense. But on that big stage last night, I thought they really showed out. And I also thought Mario Cristobal, in not going for it on like the Oregon 45 or something late, you know, Maria Taylor's talking about how half the defense has oxygen masks and then he puts them right back on the field. I thought he hung them out to dry a little bit there. the creativity was Oregon had a nice first punch, but the counterpunch of not being able to go downfield, there was not a trick play attempted. There was not, you know, trying to use the field horizontally in the run game. Other than the one time they did, they scored a touchdown with Darian Felix, you know, going some sort of fly sweep action, whatever. And that to me was Oregon didn't have that follow up punch. They didn't have that out pitch, like they say in baseball, right? They didn't have that slider. And Auburn eventually wore down the Oregon defense, clearly gassed, and did what we think Auburn will be pretty good. They might be up and down with the true freshman quarterback, but they weathered the storm and they fought back. I had that feeling pretty much the whole fourth quarter. I don't see how Oregon wins this game.
Yeah.
As they're winning.
That's always
that feeling.
A terrible feeling, isn't it?
The worst. You just feel like it's a bloodletting. You're slowly bleeding out. And it was it's a tough ask to watch a team that makes you feel that way.
It is. Okay. So Auburn wins. Big win.
Yeah, for
sure. Good news for Oregon is that they still are on pace to defend that Red Box Bowl championship. In case you're wondering, in case you're keeping score at home.
A good defensive performance against Michigan State. Yeah.
Still on track. Now, the bad SEC storylines. We spent so much time this offseason talking about how the SEC East was better. And to be fair, it probably will be, right? It still should be. It's just that the ceremonial product launch in this case did not go very well. We had three, I think, significant upsets in the SEC East. We will first start, of course, with Georgia State 38, Tennessee 20. Oof. This one got off to a rocky start, no pun intended.
Ooh.
A bit of a bad omen at the Vol Navy before the game. Did you see this?
A boat burned down and sank?
A 42-foot cabin cruiser that was docked at Vol Navy burnt and sank at 7 a.m. before the game. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. All four people and the dog that were aboard got off safely. Mm-hmm. So that's good news. The bad news in terms of a football game is that Georgia State was 2-10 a year ago. They were a 25-point dog coming into this game. They just started up their program 10 years ago. They never beat a Power 5 team before yesterday. And then you add insult to injury, they collected $950,000 for traveling to Knoxville to play this game in what seemingly should be a win for the Volunteers.
Good gig.
A good gig. Tennessee's line defensively had a lot of trouble with Georgia State. Mm-hmm. Not a good sign going into an SEC schedule. The Panthers ran for over 200 yards as a team. Jared Guarantano, two big fourth quarter turnovers, a fumble, and then an interception. Tennessee, Dan, I don't know what to make of this. It's not the first time we've seen Tennessee flounder a bit in week one. It's just I thought we were past this now.
I don't know why you thought that, but yeah, Georgia State beat them. It was Tennessee turnovers, but Georgia State ran on them. They played good enough defense, even though they were outgained, and they were just, they were less prone to making mistakes, which week one, maybe Tennessee is able to clean that up, but Georgia State, coming off of a bad year, was the better team on the field.
Remarkable.
Yep, for sure.
Absolutely remarkable. I don't want to harp too much on this, because we have a lot of very nice Tennessee fans who listen to the show. Thankfully, it's got no bearing on the SEC conference schedule, and they will have a chance to rectify this moving forward, but wow, what a dud to start the season. Losing
it has no bearing. It has no bearing other than this same Tennessee team has to play their SEC schedule. Yes.
I'm trying to paint this in a positive light, Dan. It's week one.
Okay. Let's stay negative.
Wyoming 37, Missouri 31. The second of, again, three big, pretty bad SEC East storylines. Mizzou, a 17-point favorite on the road in Laramie, but was outscored 27-3 in a torrid second quarter by the Wyoming Cowboys. Wyoming then builds on that lead. They end up with like a 34-17 lead going into the fourth quarter. And Missouri, quite frankly, unable to dig out. Kelly Bryant threw for over 400, but had a pick in the end zone, had a fumble that went for a scoop and score at another point earlier in the game. Mizzou had another fumble down by the goal line, so shooting themselves in the foot here against a quality opponent. Wyoming's not a bad opponent. They outgained Wyoming by like 150 yards or so, but tough to win when you're -3 in turnover margin, especially on the road.
Yeah, only takeaway here, mistakes, and Mizzou is not ready for moments. Wyoming did an unbelievable job stopping Mizzou on the ground, and we anticipated the Tigers being better there with the backs that they returned, and they just weren't, and they needed to come back to make it a game. Wyoming was just all over the place on defense, and that was the difference maker, taking advantage of Mizzou mistakes.
When we did the Missouri preview, I remember the chat about, you know, Mizzou could be 8-0 headed into that Georgia game.
Yeah, our voices went up.
The register went up a little bit because the schedule set up so favorably for them. So this is a bit of a mystery as to how this happened, and certainly something that Missouri fans aren't going to be very pleased about.
Yeah, and Wyoming ran all over them, too.
They did. Okay, and then the final one, and this is the one that I think I find the most confounding. It's not on quite the same level, but the stunner of the day was North Carolina knocking off South Carolina, 24-20. It was in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
The read on South Carolina coming into the season, and I did the preview, they had a ton back, and Will Muschamp was out there talking about how the program could get to new heights this year. But their biggest issue was the schedule, right? Nobody,
totally. Huge.
Nobody really included North Carolina as one of those tough opponents. Obviously, right. That was the wrong assumption. But beyond that, beyond the schedule, they had a problem with turnovers last year that they needed to fix. They had a few little things, but it seemed to be setting up pretty well for South Carolina. It was just a schedule thing. Well, Dan, Jake Bentley picked off by the same guy twice in South Carolina's final three possessions. North Carolina runs for 245 on the ground, led by Javonte Williams, who went over 100 yards. Michael Carter, Antonio Williams also contribute. This is why this is significant to me. In the preview that I did for North Carolina, I remember reading a lot about how Phil Longo, new offensive coordinator, wanted to come in and throw the ball. Now, they've got a true freshman quarterback, Sam Howell, who we can talk a little bit about, but they wanted to throw the ball despite the fact that this is clearly an offense that had the personnel and seemingly was built more for the run. The fact that they were this successful, 245 on the ground, running the football, that they didn't quite steer into that pass-happy approach we thought they might try, that is significant. That's telling me they're looking at the personnel, they're looking at the matchup, and they're going to do what they think is best. Obviously, it worked. They didn't try to force it here. They stuck with what they thought their strengths were, and they end up knocking off South Carolina by 4. Again, neutral site game, but they were an 11.5-point dog.
Yeah, you figured the senior quarterback versus the quarterback starting his first game, that in terms of command and poise and mistakes, that Jake Bentley would have that edge on a... It was a neutral field. It's in North Carolina, but it was a neutral field. And North Carolina was just, and I'll steal my own phrasing, they were totally dece.
Totally dece.
Totally dece. And you're right that they went to the run early. They took the wrapping off of Sam Howell later on, and he had some ridiculous throws just for a true freshman starting his first game. But it was North Carolina turnovers and the Tar Heels looking more competitive and more in command more consistently, even though the offense struggled the first two or three quarters. It was UNC almost giving the game away, by the way, at the very end, with Mack Brown taking a midfield knee on fourth down.
That was very bizarre.
To set up a South Carolina Hail Mary possibility that obviously didn't come to fruition. But it was North Carolina looking more prepared to play decent football week one. And that's a bit of a surprise from where South Carolina was last season. And UNC was competitive, but this was about the Tar Heels and Mack Brown in game one.
That was my trepidation. My trepidation with South Carolina is they were so bad with turnovers last year. Mm-hmm. Even if they got better, to what extent could they improve?
Right. And the rush defense was, you know, the injuries were blamed for some leaky rush defense last year. And
injuries were blamed, but they brought a lot of those guys back. They had experience. So this one to me was actually the stunner of the day. I just did not see this coming at all. North Carolina looked a lot better than I expected. So
time to clean it up. You have time.
All right. And then the other, I guess, big headliner before we jump into individual conferences, Boise State 36, Florida State 31. When we did our preview, this game was supposed to be at night in Jacksonville, but due to the impending hurricane Dorian, hopefully everyone can stay safe down in the southeastern part of the country.
Right.
They moved this game to 12 noon and actually in Tallahassee. So it was an interesting crowd there. I think a lot of people got in for free. It wasn't quite a full house because late scheduling things tend to do that. How much of this game did you watch, and what was your takeaway here?
I watched a lot of this game, and I was surprised that Boise had so much trouble with Florida State in the first half. Just those explosion plays.
Unbelievable, right?
The time of possession was something wild. It was like 30 minutes to 9 minutes at one point, with Florida State comfortably winning. I think they were up 31-13 at one point. And I sort of wrote off Boise at that point, just that they weren't able to finish drives. Yeah, 31-13 at one point in the little bit of time left in the second quarter. But that entire time, Boise was 6-7 yards a carry. They were going straight at the Florida State defense. You mentioned to me, Hank Bachmeier had 73 completions for like 120 yards. Just nothing over 8 yards, but everything was there. You know, Florida State kept the Broncos in front of them, but they just kept going down the field, making some mistakes. And Boise just stuck to their game plan and, you know, made adjustments on defense to stop giving up big plays in the second half. I thought Florida State looked atrocious at times offensively in the second half, actually on both sides of the ball in the second half. And the big takeaway for me was Florida State needs to learn how to figure out 11-yard plays and not just rely on 72-yard plays for offense. And Boise State did a magnificent job mentally of just saying, okay, next play we're doing this, then after that we're doing this. And that to me was the really impressive thing, given the situations with moving the game, going across the country, you know, the energy being taken out, moved to noon at Tallahassee. I was impressed with Boise's, I guess, fortitude in this game.
From that point forward, after Boise was down 31-13 late in the second quarter, they rattle off 23 unanswered points and pretty much dominated the game. Now, the one constant throughout this game, even in the beginning when Boise was losing, their ability to sustain drives and control a clock was very much a harbinger of things to come. They finished this game with 40 minutes of possession, and eventually that caught up with Florida State's defense. They looked gassed in the fourth quarter when Boise was, you know, mounting their charge.
Maybe Florida State should practice with the humidity to really get in shape.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
They looked like they were tired late in the game. And it was because of that time of possession, because of Boise's slow, systematic way of controlling the clock. On their side of things, Hank Bachmeier threw 51 passes, most of which were short to intermediate, as he said. Mm-hmm. I don't have the exact numbers, but it feels like Florida State missed a lot of open field tackles here.
Yes.
So he finishes with 407 yards passing. I would love to see the deepest ball that he completed all day, because it couldn't have been that deep of a throw. It was a lot of short stuff, a lot of intermediate dump offs. He just got into a rhythm in the second half. They started finding ways to build confidence for him. The Boise defense came through, and it had to. Florida State was just 1 of 12 on third downs. They outgained Florida State 621 to 426. Right. This is a really, really good showing by Boise State to come from behind 18 down late in the second quarter and end up winning this one.
Yeah, Florida State almost completely surrendered the line of scrimmage. And yeah, it comes to comes back to fortitude for me. And anytime they show what a team did in its facility, in its indoor field or whatever, whether it's piping and noise. At Boise, they had like the sprinklers going to get it really humid and hot in there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a great, great fantasy thing. This is what they did to emulate the environment to which they're going. I love that.
All right. So where should we go next? Now that we sort of got the headliners out of the way, Dan, we've got action all around the country for the first time in forever.
Yeah.
Was there any conference in particular that you'd like to start with?
Yeah, I think the Big Ten had a weird day, and we should go through it. Okay. Or a weird week one.
What stood out to you about the Big Ten?
So, first of all, Wisconsin completely demolishing and pushing around South Florida, I believe, on Friday night, shutting them out, dropping 50 or 49. JTT had a great, great night. Jonathan Taylor tailback. That, to me, was encouraging. Doesn't mean I think Wisconsin's winning the conference, but if they were indeed back from to where they were a couple years ago, a great first outing. More of the same from Michigan State against Tulsa, an incredible defensive performance. I think they had one offensive touchdown against Tulsa. So, I mean, I don't know how much there is to say about that, because that just feels normal. Rutgers dropped 50 on UMass, which a lot of it through the air. I mean, I don't think much of Rutgers, but if they're going to win multiple games, UMass was one of them that they needed. Nevada-Purdue was wild at the end.
Did you see the freshman kicker who found out Friday morning he was going to be the starting kicker is the one who booted a 56-yard. That's a bomb of a field goal in the NFL. It's a bomb in college. 56-yarder at the gun to upset Purdue.
Freshman cojones might be the theme between Bo Nix, Hank Bachmeyer, that kicker, all over the place. Shane Lee for Alabama. A lot of freshman cojones stepping
Daniels,
into big places. Jaden Daniels for ASU. We can go all over. I'm sure we're forgetting people. But yeah, the fact remains, Nevada, who I think a lot of people had, as including us, as kind of down this year, an incredible performance against against Purdue at home, beating a Big Ten team. Turnovers, as is going to be the case pretty much across the board, were the difference maker in this game.
Penn State and Maryland both hang 79 on their opponents. I'll start with Penn State. I got a really funny email here. It came in just before we hit the record button from Adam. He says, if Trace McSorley has a little bit of Baker Mayfield in him and Sean Clifford has a little Trace McSorley in him, does that mean that Sean Clifford must then have a little bit of Baker Mayfield in him?
The transitive Mayfield property?
The transitive Mayfield, yes.
I did not watch any of this game because it was Penn State, Idaho, but it seems the offense is in a good place. It wasn't Ricky Slade, right, who put on the show?
No, it wasn't.
In the backfield.
It wasn't. No, they had all sorts of guys contributing. The big story for Penn State is Sean Clifford taking over for Trace McSorley. I thought he looked pretty good in his first start. Only played a half.
Right.
The defense looks crazy fast, but everyone expected that.
Yeah.
It was good for Penn State. They played pretty much everyone on their depth chart. And then on the Maryland side, Josh Jackson, the Virginia Tech transfer, threw for four touchdowns. Maryland's defense held Howard to 68 total yards. I don't know how much you can read into that, but
zero.
No, right, exactly. But as things go for Mike Locksley's first game to play a local team, establish yourself as being 79 points dominant, that was a good start.
Yes. Speaking of good start, Illinois poured it on Akron in the drive for six begins in earnest now. 42-3. Brandon Peters looks sharp. The running game looks sharp. The defense looks sharp, which is probably more important than any of those things. So that's a nice little nugget. Northwestern Stanford was very strange. I don't know if we want to talk about
this game
or with the Pac-12.
Why don't we save this game for later? Because we don't want to bore people in the first half of the show. This was a tremendously boring football game.
The Michigan passing game looked exciting. There were some health issues for Shea Patterson, it looked like, and they had some weird double McCaffrey Patterson formations that didn't do much, but it looks like the passing game has taken a step forward in as much as we can think that against Mitsu. Goes for Justin Fields and Ohio State. What do you have for Michigan?
I thought the new look offense left a lot to be desired.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Thought downfield, they were in a pretty good place with some weird injuries and formations.
Shea Patterson fumbles on the first play of the game.
Yes, he does.
Not a great way to start the season. He fumbles again later on in the game. Nice little backdoor cover, if I could.
True.
Middle Tennessee hits a completely meaningless 59-yard touchdown pass with a minute left. So if you bet the over in this game, you won by, I guess, 2 points or so. But Michigan's got some tidying up to do before moving on here.
Yeah, and that's to be expected. That's why you play Middle Tennessee in week one and not Auburn. That is why you do that. And Michigan has played in that game. They played Florida a couple years ago to open the season and had their own growing pains with that game. Still won, but I thought more encouragingly offensively, Ohio State just absolutely laid it on before you could even blink over FAU.
45-21 was the final there. And you might remember Florida Atlantic was the launching pad for Kyler Murray's Heisman run last year.
True.
I'm not saying Justin Fields is going to win the Heisman, but four touchdown passes, one rushing touchdown, that's a pretty good showing for your first game as a Buckeye. He did make a few mistakes here and there.
Right.
But it's, again, how much can you really read into a win over Florida Atlantic? We're going to have to gauge this moving forward as they play against better competition. The one thing I will say that I thought was actually the most encouraging, and Justin Fields is going to get the headlines.
Right.
The first team defense kept Florida Atlantic to negative 14 yards in the first half.
It's pretty good.
As you know, defense was an issue last year. So I take more away from that than I do necessarily on the Justin Fields front.
Yeah. And he was kept pretty clean, which I liked a lot because offensive line was also an issue. Hard to take away too much going against the FAU defense, but for sure an encouraging first game and makes me want to watch Ohio State that much more. Iowa looks decent enough.
Speaking of Heisman Trophy candidates, let's talk about that Nate Stanley Heisman campaign, shall we?
Yes, let's. I'm ready.
252 passing yards, three touchdowns, We hear a lot about tanking for Tua. We hear a little bit about losing for Lawrence, even though it's 2 years out. What about stinking for Stanley? Can we start this?
Naughty for Nate? Sure.
Naughty for Nate? Two
so
options.
So much worse.
Solidverbal@gmail.com. Let us know your
stinking
thoughts.
For Stanley's probably better. The more encouraging thing is, yes, it's Miami of Ohio. Not a lot to take away, but Iowa ran the ball. They full-on ran the ball in a pretty good way.
Yep.
That is a thing that Iowa has not done for a while. Nate Stanley was good. The defense was predictably good. Slow start offensively for Iowa, but good to see the Hawkeyes start strong.
And Nebraska wins by 14 over South Alabama. They needed two defensive and one special teams touchdown to win this game because the offense wasn't all that great. Mm-hmm. And that is even with South Alabama turning the ball over five times.
Correct. And week one, and I presume they're going to fix things and get things right. But yeah, book South Alabama week one.
All right. Where should we go next, Dan? You want to go to ACC?
Let's go to the ACC.
Clemson wins pretty big over Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
So this was what, a Thursday night game?
Yeah, the very first one on the ACC network, which I don't have.
Travis Etienne ran for 205 and three touchdowns. Not a great game for Trevor Lawrence, to be honest.
I thought he was fine.
He had two picks in the first half. He showed moments of brilliance because we know he's got plenty of those. But two picks in the first half, the numbers don't jump off the page. They win rather handily over Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech, going to take them a little while to get past that option. Just not great on offense right now. 52-14, they end up losing.
Yeah, it's going to take a while. I wasn't that down on Trevor Lawrence. He made incredible throws. He made definitely two or three bad ones. Story of the game was Travis Etienne, who just ran all over the Tech defense, finishes over 200 yards. And Clemson gets their ones off the field pretty quickly, which I think is the biggest takeaway.
So Syracuse shut out Liberty 24-0, but that's not really the headline of this game, is it?
No, no, no.
In case you needed any more reinforcement that college football is fun and stupid and sometimes really weird, I submit as evidence to you, Daniel, the pictures that we should post if we haven't already of Hugh Freeze in the coach's booth in a hospital bed, right?
Correct. Giving Dino a thumbs up when Dino pointed up to him.
How does that happen?
I don't know, but if you have whatever the injury is that Hugh Freeze has, you know, he was having spasms and, you know, nerve issues,
he had a staph
whatever.
Infection.
Staph infection,
yeah,
yes.
Bad stuff.
You don't need to be in the booth.
Stay home, dog. Come on.
The feeling I got was the hospital bed was one step short of being wheeled in like Hannibal Lecter on the sideline by, like, you know, they have the get back coach to make sure coaches don't get penalties by going too far out on the field.
Right.
That same guy should have been wheeling around Hugh Freeze in one of those stand up dolly Hannibal Lecter type things. It was the story of the game. What should have been the story is Syracuse defense. Syracuse having some offensive line issues. Tommy DeVito looking kind of uneven, and I worry a little bit. Hopefully they'll get it fixed, but yeah, it's the hospital bed.
The hospital bed. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Virginia goes to Pitt and wins. Their defense really asserted itself in the second half, took advantage of a new Pitt line that had all sorts of trouble protecting Kenny Pickett.
Mm-hmm.
He threw 41 times, which I don't know is the best sign, to be honest. I know they're trying to open things up now, but he just couldn't get comfortable, was running for his life the whole game. Virginia and Bryce Perkins win by 16 on the road. The Virginia Tech game was maddening to me.
Lock of the week,
First off, credit to Boston College
for
a nice win to open their season. Anthony Brown looked terrific through the air. Defense forced five turnovers. Great start to week one. Good on you, Steve Adazio.
Yeah, week one, having the better defense at home to me was seemed to be crucial to me. And the fact that Zay Flowers looked like kind of a full-on dude, even though he didn't make my week one dude list, he's being acknowledged as a dude now.
More importantly, though, I am personally offended by this performance by Virginia Tech. All offseason, talking up returning production and how they got to get better on defense. And how did you know Ryan Willis was actually the fourth most efficient passer in the ACC? No one's talking about him. What the hell was this? You let Anthony Brown throw for 275?
Yeah.
Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you freaking kidding me? They lose 35-28 on the road. A terrible performance, and they're dead to me. Tech is dead to me now, Dan. They're dead to me the way TCU's been dead to me in the past. I put my faith, I put my hope, I put emotional energy behind the Hokies, and this is what they give me in week one, so I'm out.
It's almost like they lost their last four or five ACC games last year, including by double digits to Boston College. It's almost as if that were the situation with your guy, Ryan Willis.
All right. Elsewhere, very quickly in the ACC, North Carolina State wins 34-6 over ECU. Nice game from Matthew McKay.
Yeah.
Over 300 yards in his first start.
And but it's ECU.
It's ECU. And finally, Wake Forest, 38-35. A fun game.
Hell yeah.
Fun game here as Wake wins. A lot of points, a lot of yards. Got some nominations for Jamie Newman as Dude of the Week with 401 passing, three touchdowns, and another touchdown on the ground.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Improvising, making huge plays when it mattered most. This game came down to it. And two great quarterbacks, Jordan Love, just made mistakes. And Jamie Newman really didn't over the course of this game. Looks to continue to appear to be, if that's grammatically anything, somebody who can put this Wake team on their back, as they will probably need to win a bunch of shootouts to win 7-8 games.
Let's go over to the SEC, Dan. Alabama 42, Duke 3.
Yeah.
The big news here. Alabama held scoreless in the first quarter. Does Bama have a Duke problem? People were saying.
I think so. That's what it appears. Let's talk about the next three quarters. Hopefully Duke held up their end of the bargain.
Honey, it's ready.
But then the crock pot started warming up. And yes. Tua finishes with 336 yards, four touchdowns, and just three quarters of action. Surprise, surprise. Alabama wins. They cover. Duke had a lot of trouble moving the football. This was not a surprise to anyone who looked at this game with any amount of depth.
What was also clear to me about this game, well, first, defensively, being down Dylan Moses and how well the linebackers played and how much they just completely overwhelmed Duke as if they had been playing for 3 years already. That was a huge takeaway for me. The secondary looked terrific. The fact is, Jerry Jeudy's an NFL receiver, not like he's going to be playing on Sundays, or you might be seeing him at the next level. He currently is an NFL receiver, and he just happens to be playing for Alabama. Right. That, to me,
he's like the 12-year-old with a beard in the Pee Wee League, right?
That's more physical. He's more like Mike Trout playing in a Pee Wee League right now for a baseball. Are very like sly, consistent baseball references with an out pitch and Mike Trout and Danny Almonte.
Sure.
Alabama didn't run the ball well. Najee Harris doesn't play the first quarter. Doesn't really matter because Tua is also at least a borderline NFL quarterback at the moment. He's ridiculous. And it's Duke.
42-3, your final score. On the other side of the SEC, Georgia goes to Vandy and wins. Sort of a rare way to kick off the SEC season for the Georgia Bulldogs on the road. They win 30-6. They scored a touchdown on their first three possessions. They do have to shore up the penalty yardage, though. 10 penalties, 115 yards for the Georgia Bulldogs. Kirby Smart will get that buttoned up in due time, I'm sure. The other story that I take away from this is, despite losing pretty much his entire receiving core, Jake Fromm didn't have great numbers, didn't really need to, didn't have any trouble spreading the ball.
They didn't ask him to do much.
They didn't ask him to do much, but when he did throw the ball, he didn't have any trouble finding targets, and I think that's important.
They completely won the line of scrimmage. The offensive line looked terrific up front. They looked fast and angry. And yeah, offensively, you'd like to see some more creativity, but it's week one against Vandy and you're up three touchdowns. I'm not sure how much more Georgia wanted to show ahead of what they have Notre Dame in 2 weeks or next? In 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. So it all makes sense.
LSU 55, Georgia Southern 3. We talked about this game. We're like, hey,
a new LSU.
Let's keep tabs on this game. You never know.
Yeah. Didn't have to keep tabs for long.
Joe Dirt, our boy Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
23-27, 278, five touchdowns. Looked really sharp in this game. Mm-hmm. LSU outgains Georgia Southern 472-98. This is all significant because LSU, first off, gets a resounding 52-point victory in week one. Hooray, hooray. Mm-hmm. But they go to Texas next week. And what will surely be a pretty big bellwether game for, I think, the next rung of teams down from maybe the teams we assume are playoff contenders down to that very next level. LSU's kind of on the cut line there, along maybe with Texas. Next week's going to be very significant. They looked really good in week one. That, I think, bodes well for week two.
Yeah, Joe Burrow, very good out of play action. I think he completed, 14 different receivers caught a pass for LSU.
Crazy.
So they certainly seem to be taking a step forward. Georgia Southern, not a complete walkover normally, but appeared to be the case. Honestly, if you ate something that was high in fiber before this game and needed to go elsewhere while this game was on, by the time you got back, it was kind of over.
It was kind of over, yeah.
It was kind of over. So let's hope that this portends and this is indicative of things to come for LSU's offense when they take on a team of comparable talent.
And let's hope everyone's getting enough fiber. I mean,
I pump, I hit the drum, whatever the phrasing is for hydration and water.
Yeah.
Make sure you get some fiber. Keep that factory moving.
Metamucil, not a sponsor, but could be.
Could be.
Could be. Moving on. Mississippi State 38, Louisiana 28. Not the best start for Mississippi State, if I'm being honest here, but a good start for Tommy Stevens. 236, two touchdowns, one rushing touchdown. Kylan Hill got some dude nominations for him. Almost 200 yards on the ground for Mississippi State. They win over Louisiana by 10.
Yep.
We had Kentucky 38, Toledo 24. This one was back and forth for a little bit. Had some highs and lows for Kentucky, really, on both sides of the football. What matters is that they came through when they had to, whether it was putting a drive together on offense or getting a big stop or a turnover on D. They do what they have to do to knock off Toledo by 14.
Yeah, I didn't watch a lot of this game, but from the footage I saw, I really liked Kentucky on the ground on offense, and I'm a little bit worried about their secondary. I'm a little bit worried about their secondary ahead of their SEC schedule.
And finally, in the SEC, Memphis 15, Ole Miss 10, a really bad beat if you went over 65 in this game.
That's not a bad beat. That is a thorough beat down. Yeah.
Just a bet. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. If you bet the over and tuned in late, this is definitely one of those games where you're wondering, is there a lightning delay here? What is going on? Nope. 25 total points. Memphis does win. They do cover, I believe, thanks to a late safety in this football game.
Yeah, the Rich Rod offense, not a great start. They don't score in the first half and just ugly, ugly stuff, both through the air and on the ground. It's going to take a bit. It's going to take a bit. Good for Memphis for winning when they themselves look pretty sloppy. And I guess good for Ole Miss's defense for coming to play after a couple of years where they definitely did not. But yeah, this was not a very watchable TV show for me.
Let's go to the Pac-12 here to round things out. And let's start with Utah. 30-12 over BYU in the Holy War.
Mm-hmm.
This was not an explosive offensive performance for Utah. It didn't need to be. They scored touchdowns off three BYU turnovers. They win by 18. So that's a good win in a rivalry game. This game has been close the last 6 years. Yeah. They were able to pull away here and win pretty easily. So that's good for the Utes. I think it is more telling about the defense, though. The fact that the defense at Utah, which is typically pretty good, was able to change the game the way that they did here. That was significant. That will serve them well.
Yeah, the defense was more of what we've seen these past few years from the Utes, which is really good. And they could have put, I guess, closer to 40 on the board. I think they finish out the game with like a 9 or 10 minute drive, as Utah does sometimes. But yeah, especially through the air, because Zach Moss was great on the ground. I'm a little bit worried about Utah generating some explosion plays. But it's week one. You win a rivalry game by 18. You can't be in all that bad a place.
Their presumed rival in the Pac-12 South is USC. Mm-hmm. USC won. They didn't cover, but they won at home against Fresno, 31-23. The big story here, though, was that JT Daniels, starting quarterback, left before halftime with a knee injury. They had to cart him off the field. He had a brace on his knee. He's getting an MRI, maybe as we speak.
Yeah.
That is not good news for USC. That is not good news for Clay Helton if he hopes to stick around. It's even worse news considering that Jack Sears, I believe, just entered the transfer portal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
USC is going to have some decisions to make how they get through the season if he's going to miss any kind of time.
Yeah, USC, there were some promising elements to their offense, especially early on. I think it's Keaton Slovis came in.
Yep.
In JT Daniels' stead. Hopefully the injury is not super serious, but USC ran the ball well. They looked more complete offensively, but it was still an uneven day. After that initial, like, first second quarter scripted stuff for USC, they definitely hit a wall at times offensively. Fresno comes back and makes this a game late. I have no idea what to think of Fresno's new quarterback, Reyna, but he seemed to be a playmaker for them. And, man, hope JT Daniels is all right, because that's kind of the season.
If we stick in the Pac-12 South, there was a big game called by our friend Adam Amin.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday night in Cincinnati, the Bearcats win 24-14 over UCLA. You could argue that UCLA's offensive line never got off the bus. Maybe they never got on the plane to get to Cincinnati because they didn't do a whole lot of good out there.
No.
It's significant because UCLA, of course, despite not looking great, was also without a bunch of guys. Joshua Kelly didn't play in the game.
Right, Howard, yeah.
I would expect that they're going to get better, that this is not going to be the norm for the season. But UCLA fans, if you read Twitter, if you read some of the articles out there, already starting to lose a little bit of patience, and perhaps rightfully so. On the flip side of things, Cincinnati, I thought, looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And next week, they have Ohio State, which could be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, I mean, especially for Ohio State's offense going against the Cincinnati defense, who they were good against UCLA, but there was a lot of UCLA, like, getting to the red zone and dropping the balls.
Yeah.
That was DTR with the fumbles. It was just sloppy play from UCLA, and Cincinnati, as good teams tend to do, took advantage of UCLA's miscues. So, yes, next week should be interesting. I like Ohio State, but good opening salvo from Cincy.
Talk to me about the Stanford-Northwestern game, the Scholastic scrimmage.
Must we?
The Scholastic scrimmage. Yeah.
It was a mess. The play calling was a mess. The how adventurous both of these teams wanted to be play calling and situationally was a mess. Very conservative play. KJ Costello goes out with, I couldn't really tell if I thought it was a cheap shot or not. He seemed to pull up a little, but he got hit hard.
A late hit.
It was late. Davis Mills comes in the backup and does nothing. Stanford couldn't really move the ball consistently. At times, they look okay on the ground. I thought Connor Weddington was okay through the air at receiver for Stanford. But the bigger story to me was just how inept Northwestern's offense was, which they always tend to be in September.
Yeah.
And I always think, well, this is the year they get things fixed. They got Hunter Johnson, the Clemson transfer. No. Northwestern was a nightmare, and to top it all off, they couldn't even cover the spread in this close, ugly game because they fumble it late, can't fall on it like it appeared they were going to do in their own end zone for a safety, and just an awful beat for Northwestern plus 5.5
betters. Front door cover for Stanford.
Front door cover. So this, I think, means that Northwestern is going to have an amazing year. Whoever loses an ugly game between Stanford and Northwestern, whether or not they're playing each other in September to start the season, they generally tend to bounce back and be like, oh, if only we didn't lose this stupid game early. So I think that's what the Groundhog's Day of college football means. Now Northwestern's going to go 10-2.
I can't tell you how many emails we've gotten from people. Is Northwestern back?
To being old Northwestern, yeah.
All right, elsewhere. In the Pac-12, big game for Jake Eason in his first start at Washington. They take it to Eastern Washington 47-14. Eason with four touchdowns, almost 350 yards through the air. So that's a good sign. Good sign for the Huskies.
Yeah, I'm going to wait and see. But he's, you know, very lively arm, huge talent. We'll see if he comes through against better defenses. But yes, very encouraging. I think more so for the Washington defense with who they've replaced. But again, Eastern Washington, we'll see.
And perhaps even more so for Washington State, their rival, 58-7 over New Mexico State. Their new quarterback, senior Anthony Gordon, looked really good. Completed his first 15 passes through touchdowns of 41, 48, 19, and 54 yards in the first half. Finished with five touchdowns in total and 420 yards passing. So a really good showing for him.
Yeah, and Max Borgie and both and Dez Patman, both just great players. It's New Mexico State. I hope Washington State's able to keep this up because the Pac-12 can use all of the exciting teams that it can get after week one.
Colorado wins 52-31 over Colorado State. Defense needs a little bit of seasoning, but the offense looked pretty decent, as you might say.
Yes.
We had Cal winning 27-13 over UC Davis. Big game for Christopher Brown Jr., 197 on the ground.
Slow start, though, for Cal. In the midst of the Pac-12 struggling, at Stanford not looking good, Oregon, I don't know how much this crossover, looking like they were going to win the game and then not winning. I think Cal went down 10-0 pretty quickly to UC Davis, and it was not a good place to be for Larry Scott.
And Jaden Daniels, finally, for Arizona State. 30-7, they win out
total bright
over
spot.
Kent State, yep, looked pretty good. 284, two touchdowns, and another one on the ground. And you know what? I misspoke. I said, let's round things out. I was getting ready to end the show. We didn't talk about the Big 12 yet.
No, we did not.
We didn't talk about Iowa State nearly losing to Northern Iowa. Three overtimes, Dan. Three overtimes.
Ugly
game. Very ugly game. This would have been something if Northern Iowa knocked Iowa State off. Iowa State coming into the season ranked. It's been a while since they were in that spot. It was clear that the offense without David Montgomery and Hakeem Butler was different. And also the play calling, a bit suspect. In the end, Brock Purdy makes a big play. And that big play was jumping on a fumble.
Oh, huge.
In triple overtime, a play or two before eventually they end up winning. But basically, that's what saved Iowa State. Survive in advance here in week one. Northern Iowa is not a bad opponent by any stretch, but still, I think we expected a little bit more from Iowa State.
I don't know that Northern Iowa was a good opponent. I like their quarterback. He seemed
a better
fun.
Opponent.
I don't know. Northern Iowa is an FCS school. They were good a couple years ago. They were like a 7-6 FCS school last year. So I don't think this is North Dakota State that Iowa State is beating, but I am no FCS expert. They score their touchdown to stay in this game on a, you know, Brock Purdy gets his arm hit and fumbles it forward, and they take it the distance. And overtime was dicey. It was a fun watch, but Iowa State needs to get some things worked out in finishing drives 100%.
Texas wins 45-14 over Louisiana Tech. Sam Ellinger, four touchdown passes. Keontae Ingram, a nice game. Only 11 carries, but 78 yards and a touchdown. Mm-hmm. They need him to do more of that. They need him to do more of that if they want to contend against teams like LSU.
And the defense was very good for Texas. Not a surprise necessarily, but with what they had to replace on a couple different levels. You know, they were up 38-7, 38-0 pretty later on. So it was Louisiana Tech scoring meaningless touchdowns. So good for Texas going into LSU.
British comedy legend Alan Bowman, 40 of 55 on the day, 436 yards, two touchdowns passing. Texas Tech knocks off Montana State by 35. They finish with almost 700 total yards of offense.
Yes. Baylor lays the wood on Stephen Austin. Kansas State big over Nichols. TCU comfortable over, I think, Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Yep.
West Virginia struggled against JMU.
Two touchdowns in the second half, I believe, for Austin Kendall in his debut.
Yeah. So they're going to need a better start moving forward.
Kansas wins. They had a rally to get this one, but they get first win in the Les Miles era over Indiana State, 24-17. And then there was this Oklahoma State game, Dan.
Yeah.
So this was on the road in Corvallis, a weird way to start the year. Oklahoma State wins 52-36 over Oregon State. Most importantly, we talked about the over-under in this game. And I had a friend who was in, and you said, yeah, you could see it. Well, lo and behold, it hit.
Yeah.
But did you see why the second half was delayed a few minutes?
No. Why was it?
Coaches got stuck in the elevator.
Oh, that'll happen. I've gotten stuck in that elevator. Oh, yeah. That's a thing.
Coaches got stuck in the elevator in the stadium. They had to delay the start of the second half by a little bit. Otherwise, though, pretty good showing, I thought, for Oklahoma State. 52 points. Defense always needs work. But Spencer Sanders, the first freshman to start a season for Oklahoma State since the Wes Lunt era. Remember him back in 2012? And he threw three touchdowns.
Yeah, I was impressed with Spencer Sanders, especially, you know, as a dual threat. Chuba Hubbard was predictably incredible for the Cowboys. And Oregon State has a receiver in Isaiah Hodgins that he's the type of receiver I love because he's the weapon. He's the guy. Everybody knows it. And he still gets his. And so that to me is always impressive. I think Oregon State's going to be a hard out an improved hard out. I don't think they're a bowl team, but if nothing else, it's encouraging that they're not a walkover anymore.
So there you go, Daniel. We've still got two bigger games that are going to take place. We're recording this early on a Sunday morning.
Right.
Oklahoma and Houston is tonight. Oklahoma, again, about a 23-24 point favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Monday evening, Notre Dame travels to Cardinal Stadium to square off against Louisville. Notre Dame is an 18-point road favorite.
Yeah. Otherwise, just real super rapid fire. UCF looked very strong. Brandon Wimbush split snaps with, I think his name is Dylan Gabriel, the true freshman. So we'll see what happens, how that progresses over the course of the season. Texas A&M wins big. UConn won a game, Ty.
Yeah.
This is not a drill. UConn won a game. Otherwise, Will Healy wins his first game at Charlotte over Gardner Webb, which is, you know, good for Will Healy. UAB wins, Central Michigan wins. Minnesota, we mentioned very briefly, but it was an ugly win for the Gophers over the Jackrabbits of South Dakota State, but Rashad Bateman had a completely dude-worthy catch. You mentioned Jaden Daniels in Arizona State. San Jose State won a game. I know it was against Northern Colorado. It's worth highlighting the fact that San Jose State won a game. Army snuck by Rice.
Yeah, I saw that.
Army has Michigan next week. And Rice's defense did a really impressive job against Army's option. It came down to it. So good for, you know, Rice taking a step forward. You know, we briefly mentioned Rutgers, but that was a nice win. Again, you got to win that. Otherwise, I think that's all I have. It was a really nice week for the Mountain West. Although San Diego State, did you see this final score?
Oh, my God.
This is completely off the beaten path because it was San Diego State, Weber State. But 6-0 San Diego State over Weber State. It's not good enough,
Ty. No, not good.
I don't have Dvorak dialed up, but it's the drive list, and I'll start doing the drives next week, maybe. It's a bounty of punts, Ty.
Yeah.
It is a bounty. You cannot hold all of the punts in your arms. But yeah, the Aztecs end up winning this game late.
So here's what happens throughout the course of a season. We started doing this maybe 1 or 2 years ago, but
yeah,
as we see incredible individual performances, we call out on Twitter and elsewhere for dude nominations. You know, we've got the dude alert sound that we like to play on the show. Well, we typically would list out our dudes, but we're going to do that again, just in a different format. See, now that we've joined Wondery, and Wondery is so into the true crime genre.
Yeah.
We decided that maybe we would take a little bit of a different spin on it and have a listen.
What we saw in week one from the following players was nothing short of sickening. Truly twisted individuals. Whether it was Elijah Halliburton of Wyoming silencing the Missouri offense, Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin pushing South Florida around, or Wake Forest's Jamie Newman ruthlessly eating Utah State's secondary, the destruction was apparent. Did Oregon's Javon Holland terrorize Auburn? He did. Did Hank Bachmeier make a name for himself in the Tallahassee Sun? The answer is obvious. But what about the aggression from Kylan Hill, Travis Etienne, Zach Moss, Chuba Hubbard, David Woodward, Rashad Bateman, Isaiah Hodgins, Michael Turk? Was that warranted? Some say yes. It's a cruel world after all. And what of Ambry Thomas coming back from colitis to smother receiver after receiver? And Hugh Freeze's bed? Surely they can't be ignored. And they won't be. This is Dude Awakening.
Dude Awakening!
I workshopped that name for a while.
How long did it take you to do that?
Not long. Not long, and the longest part of it was probably me going back and forth between Dude Awakening and Over My Dude Body. So,
okay,
Over My Dude Body felt a little stranger to say out loud, so I went with Dude Awakening.
But they have a show now called Over My Dead Body.
That's what really appealed to me, Ty.
Damn, all right. Well, we appreciate everyone writing in.
Yes.
Good work on that. We'll have to put that out on social media so more people can find it. Here is the deal now. We've gone through, we've given you the streamlined express version of what transpired in week one. We will be back early Tuesday morning. Check your podcast feed. Early Tuesday morning, we're going to take a knee here, take some time to try and figure out exactly what all this means as we move forward now into week two. That show drops Tuesday morning. Our weekly preview show will drop on Thursday morning. We've already got the document together, starting to look over the matchups. Much different week in week two. Couple high-level matchups that I think are going to be bellwethers as we move forward. So, interesting window of opportunity decision coming up. Yeah, a lot of fun stuff ahead here as we build up to week two. For the most part, though, week one in the books. Thank you so much to everyone who called in at 408-VERBAL-1, to everyone who tweeted us at Solid Verbal or left us a message on Facebook, on Instagram, or joined in the discussion on the subreddit at reddit.com/r/solidverbal. If you like the show, please don't forget, subscribe now, either on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, all the usual hotspots wherever you like to listen to your podcasts. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, Dan, so that, well, you're already subscribed. I don't need to tell you, but
yes, I am.
Make sure if you're out there and you're listening for the first time that you subscribe so that you can hear Dan and I all season long.
Yeah. And listen to Sports Wars. If you need even more of my voice, listen to Sports Wars. Subscribe to Sports Wars. Available wherever you listen to podcasts. How about that?
All right. All right. Fair enough. For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll be with you in a few short days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.